Hello to our listeners and welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast. On this episode, I'm excited to welcome Saskia to share the birth story of her third child. We'll talk about some really personal challenges she came up against during the birth, as well as how fast it was, how non-linear her body was when giving birth, and just the beautiful power of the body while doing that. So before we get in, I want to share with you a few things that are going on this month, and I'm going to start with the Positive Birth Helsinki meetup happening on Saturday the 25th between 10 to 12 at Lila Lukan, which is just near Kampi. If you're interested to sign up, I'm going to leave the link in the show notes, so you can just click and sign up there. It's really free to join, and it's a great opportunity to meet nest doulas, myself included, and to meet other expecting parents as well. The topic of this month is, what is giving birth actually like? And the next thing I want to share with you is that on the 30th of March, I'm hosting an online webinar with a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, about rites of passage and times of transition. And what a bigger rite of passage than giving birth, right? And the transition to becoming a mother. And this is also my work, Mother's Transition. It's something I truly am passionate about, supporting women and mothers in this transition to becoming moms. So in this webinar, we're going to give you really practical tools about how you can support yourself in this time of transition. And if you're interested in that, I will also leave the link in the show notes, and you can absolutely join, and I would love to have you there. So now let's get started on this episode, the birth story of Saskia's son. Welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast, brought to you by the Nest Doulas. I'm Danielle Bensky, a mother and postpartum doula specializing in maternal well-being and psychology. Each episode, you'll hear eye-opening interviews with some amazing people who support families in Finland just like yours. We'll help you navigate what it means to birth in Finland, growing your confidence on your parenting journey. Thank you for spending time with me today. Now let's jump into our daily dose of birthing in Finland. Hello and welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast. Today on the show, we are having another birth story, and I am hosting Saskia with me. Hello and good morning.
Hello and good morning.
It's so good to have you here. Thank you for coming on to share your son's birth story with us. Before we get into the story itself, I would love for you to just tell the audience a little bit about who you are, how long you've been in Finland, and how old your baby is.
So as you heard, my name is Saskia. I'm from England, originally, and I moved to Finland around 14 years ago now. And when I first moved here, I didn't speak a word of Finnish and I was very lost as a 14-year-old teenager. And since then I have learnt to speak Finnish and I now work as a nurse, in Helsinki. And I have three children, and the most recent one is Rudy, who is 4 months old.
Yes.
Beautiful little boy.
And that's the story you will talk about today.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Great. So that's you in a nutshell. There's so much more to you, but that's you in a nutshell, relevant to today's episode. Great. So to start us off, I would love for you to just tell us a little bit what you were doing maybe in your pregnancy, if you were doing, to prepare for this birth. And for you, it was the third one. So you had kind of experienced a little bit what that might feel like or what you may be able to expect, even though each one is different. But tell us, what were you feeling and what were you doing to prepare yourself for labor, emotionally and physically?
Well, the way this one was different was because, I mean, my first birth was 10 years ago and the second was 2 years ago, exactly yesterday. So I had a much more recent birth before Rudy was born. And so I feel like I was able to sort of figure out a little bit what I needed and what I expected. I knew what to expect. Although, as you said, every birth is very different. So I was prepared for that also, that it won't always go to plan. But as far as the pregnancy was sort of planned, well, actually, this was the only child that was like a proper plan that we like really were trying for a child, which took 3 weeks to get pregnant. So I knew that the nausea was going to hit me, and that scared me, honestly. The first birth, I didn't have any, I didn't have any. And so I was scared. And I think that there are lots of things about the birth that did actually scare me. So I wanted to sort of research ways that I could calm myself down and just get through things without being scared all the time. And the nausea did hit, and it was bad. But I knew what my body needed to handle that. I knew that I needed to eat a little bit before I get up in the morning. I knew that water was my worst enemy. But I also knew that bubbly water really helped.
Yes. So the bubbles. I had that too.
Yeah. So I don't know what it was, because I usually drink water all the time, and it was the biggest aversion that I had. It's the one thing I could never ever keep down the whole pregnancy.
That's so random. And first time I hear that.
Even when the nausea had gone, I was sort of like, oh, I really fancy a cup of water, and then no, I don't. Come straight back up. So I knew to avoid water. I did test it out one time just to be sure, and I was right. Stay away from water. But fizzy water was really good. That helped. That did help a lot. My partner also knew to expect the nausea this time, because we'd been through it before. So he knew how to help me, and he knew what I needed. And the smells were so unbelievably strong that we cancelled all smells in the house. No candles, no sprays, nothing. This time was definitely easier. But then as soon as that finished and the nausea was gone, then I feel like mentally I was very, very overwhelmed. I do partly think it's because I'm a nurse. I work in hospice, in a hospital. And it was very mentally overloading, especially while being pregnant. And it was in the summer, it was hot. I was bothered. It was bad. Plus two kids at home, which they are very, very wonderful, well-behaved children. So, I think it was just very overwhelming. It was very, very difficult. And I very much struggled mentally with this pregnancy, much more than the other two. Although my circumstances were the best with this pregnancy. I have a very good support system, and I knew what to expect. So I think
what would you put that up to? Like, if you could like reflect, what do you think?
I think
was behind
just
that?
Because I have very, very, I had a very difficult upbringing. And the expectations of how my family will react to a pregnancy were never met each time. And so it was like going through heartbreak each time. And partly, I suppose, my own fault for expecting a different reaction from everyone. But I mean, my partner and his family were over the moon for us. But I just sort of, I think it was a mixture of my job, honestly. And it was right when the city of Helsinki weren't paying people and I was one of them, and I was doing so much work. And it's a stressful job to do.
Yes.
So I think that combined with the stresses of pregnancy itself is enough to drive anyone insane, honestly.
Yeah. And it's also quite physical.
It's very physical, and especially, I hope you don't mind me saying, but on hospice, they're people that don't generally move around a lot. So we have to lift a lot of people. Yeah. And there's also cancer treatments that I wasn't allowed to be around, but I was exposed to a few times because my boss wasn't taking care of what I should and shouldn't be around. So there were just a lot of mentally overloading, like overwhelming circumstances, I think, that were just very difficult for me to process.
So how could you then find the mental space and energy to do any birth preparation?
I've learned that when I need help, I need to ask for it. And as soon as I recognize, like, now I need help, I told my partner, please help me. Like, I'm not managing mentally at all. And then I told the Nelvola also that I'm not managing mentally very well at all. And I would really like to talk to someone about it. So I started therapy during the pregnancy, which very much helped.
Good.
And I did start to feel a lot better, a lot calmer. I went on sick leave, which was a massive relief. It was very stressful to let my coworkers down. But at the same time, I obviously needed to prioritize my own health and the baby. So yeah. I went on sick leave until my maternity leave started. And already that was enough to sort of help my focus get back to preparing for the birth and preparing for life with a newborn again. And sort of being ready for those challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so was that in the form of like learning more about the physiology of birth, or what did you feel helped you get more prepared and feel more ready?
I think the first thing that I did was when I went to the appointments, the checkups, I said, I need to know what you're doing, because the first time I wasn't told what was happening and everything happened quickly and I was petrified and I was young. And that was the one thing that I really needed, is to know exactly what was happening as they were doing it. And I feel like, especially being a nurse myself, I understand more also this time around, or this last time I gave birth. I think it was just sort of a relief to know what was going on, what drugs they're putting inside me and what their plans are. And I need to know beforehand. And I do believe in having a birth plan, but I don't think that it, like, people necessarily are always ready for the letdown if it doesn't go fully to plan. 'Cause your body's going to do whatever it wants to do, honestly. So I think that I was very much prepared that this birth would go quickly. The first time the pushing was 15 minutes and the whole labor was 2 hours. the second time it was 6 minutes and Rudy came out in 3 minutes. So it was quick, but I was prepared for it to be quick. And I told the midwife when I was there, they had marked it on my file also that I'm a quick birth giver. It was written in red at the top of my file.
Beware.
Which is why they'd suggested an induction, because then I'm already at the hospital. We can do it before the due date. But I was still also petrified that it would happen naturally. And I know that that's the goal for a lot of people. But having done it once completely naturally and being cut open, I'm telling you, I'm never doing it again. No. I'm proud of the fact, honestly, that I can say I've done it one time with nothing, with no aid or drugs or anything. But it was very traumatizing for me. That was my first. So I knew what I wanted more this time round, and I told them I would. Well, we all agreed that an induction would be the best for my body, because it's gone so quickly every time. And since it was such a short gap between my last birth, a year and a half, I expected it to go quickly. And it did. So I'm very glad that I was there and I was given the option to, you know, give birth on my terms.
So now we've started to talk a little bit about the birth. Is there anything you want to add about the preparation phase before we just jump into the birth story itself?
I have a very good friend called Victoria, and she had done your photo shoot when I was pregnant. That was the first time I'd sort of really properly read about what postpartum doulas actually do. And I'd never really known before, even after having two children, I never really heard about it or knew about it. And I told her, this is amazing. Why doesn't everybody do this? Like, it's like buying your own friend to help you do everything. And I said, like, that, like, everyone deserves that after having a baby. And Victoria gifted me you.
Yes. So, but that was such a great gift.
I'll go into that once we've done the birth thing, because I think that was obviously I found out about my postpartum doula after the birth. So it wasn't something that was prepared during my pregnancy, and I was prepared to, you know, have just my partner at home.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So we'll keep that. That's a nice teaser.
Yeah.
So tell us then how the birth started. You mentioned that you decided to go with an induction, and that was maybe tell us also more about the choice. You said it was because of the fact that you knew your births were fast.
Yes.
So you had chosen to start and initiate labor with an induction. At how many weeks was that?
At exactly 39 weeks. It was on Halloween Day, the 31st of October, and we'd planned that, well, sort of, I think the last couple of months of the pregnancy is when they asked me about, and they brought up the subject very carefully, I think, because a lot of people generally are maybe avoidant of induction, and I jumped at the chance, honestly, and I said, yes, please, yes, let's do it. But I wanted to do it. I didn't want to do it with medication. Mm-hmm. I asked them if we could do it the same way my previous one was done, which is with the balloon and then breaking of waters. And that's exactly what we did. We didn't need any.
Okay. Help. Okay. Thank you for mentioning the methods as well, because I think that's important to know.
Yeah. That's well, when we talked about the induction with the Nelvolan, with the midwives, I didn't want any sort of medicated
pharmaceutical
help. Yes.
Yeah.
Pitocin is not a nice drug, I've heard. So,
or Cytotec, which they also use here.
Yeah. So, and I knew from previous time anyway that my body reacted very quickly also to the balloon and to the breaking of waters. And it did this time, luckily, as well. So
yeah.
I'm very grateful for that.
Okay, so you came in. Which hospital was this?
This one was in Naistenklinika in the center of Helsinki.
In Helsinki, okay. So you came in on the scheduled date.
Yes, 8 o'clock in the morning on Halloween Day.
And which one was first? I suppose the balloon.
Yeah, so the balloon came first, and I was, I think, a centimeter and a half already, and then within 20 minutes, I was at 4 centimeters. So they put the balloon in, and after about 15, 20 minutes, I was ready to go. So it was very quick. But I had contractions, but they weren't really, really painful yet. Mm-hmm. They were fine. They were manageable. Mm-hmm. They were, like, I could talk through everything. It was perfectly fine. We had snacks and drinks, and it was very relaxed, and I was texting friends, and it was exciting. Mm. It was really exciting.
Mm. Who was with you?
My partner, Ben.
Yeah.
He was very supportive. Also very tired. Poor man.
They are always tired at the birth.
Always tired. Poor guys. So he took a little nap.
Good for him.
But he was there with me the whole time, and they did give him the chance. They said, like, it could take a while, but he said, doubt it. And he was right. So he stayed. And we had plans for the other children to be looked after in case it took a really long time. And it didn't. So... but it was nice and relaxed. After the balloon came out, we were waiting for a little while. There was a bit of a rush downstairs in the birthing room, so they told us to wait for a little while. So we were just chatting and watching some Netflix and having our snacks. So it was nice. It was a really nice, exciting day.
Mm. Yeah, that excitement builds up for sure.
Yeah.
When you realize, oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
The moment we've been waiting for. And then what was happening next? So when did you kind of feel the ramp up in the contractions?
Well, then we were taken downstairs to the birthing room. So I was still completely fine. And I was still like this, just completely fine. And they wanted to put the epidural tubing in first without the medication, but just have it prepared so that when it does begin, then it's ready. because my body has gone so quickly the previous times. So that's what we first did. We got that ready. That didn't go, in my opinion, as planned. It was very, very painful and it kept going in the wrong spot. So I was shaking because I was so scared and in pain. And I think about six times she had to take out the needle and replace it. And it was a very uncomfortable experience, but you know, compared to birth, it's minor. So that we did that first, and then they broke my waters right after. And I said, I want to see how long I can, you know, handle the pain. Because the contraction started immediately. It was as soon as my waters broke, within, I would say, 2 minutes, it was extremely intense. It got really bad. And I was, for quite a long time, I would say probably about an hour, I think I was just managing, although it was really intense and they were very close together and they were coming in every few minutes to check. Check if I was okay. And then I said, it got to a point where I shouted, I needed help. And they came to put the medication in, and I was lying down the whole time. So they came to put it in, and I felt fine. After about 10 minutes, I was completely fine and felt very good. So then it progressed to, I was watching the contractions on the screen. Obviously I could still feel them a little bit. And they were very close together, and quite long. So I was thinking, it's going to happen very, very soon. This was all in a very short, like space of time. And she came to check me after the epidural had worn off. So it was about 2 hours, and I was only 5 centimeters. So I felt very discouraged. And she said that she's going to wait for the epidural to completely wear off and before she gives me another dose, because I was feeling it. And she asked me if I wanted to stand up for a minute, stretch my legs, and I did. And I would say within about 20 seconds, a very intense pressure and pain. And I went back and I screamed. And she asked me, like, do you need to push? And I was so in denial of what was going on, because I had no pain relief anymore. I was so in denial of what was happening. I knew very, very well that I needed to push. And still I was saying, nope, I'm just going to cry for a bit. But nope, I don't need to push. And then within about 2 seconds, I was pushing. And she sort of panicked. She had like the epidural medication in her hand. She dropped it on the floor. Everything was sort of falling everywhere, because she just literally 1 minute beforehand checked me and I was 5. Mm-hmm. And so she checked again like 2 minutes later, and I was 10. Yep. And so
this is what fast birthers do.
Everyone was panicking. We thought we were very well prepared and we had a plan in place, and everything was just falling everywhere. Ben was getting clumsy and he was like, oh no. And obviously seeing me in so much pain, he started to panic a little bit. So I really wanted to comfort him, but the pain was so intense that I couldn't. So she said, just like the next contraction, just push. And then he was out, the first contraction after all this happened. Wow. So three minutes later.
Oh, wow. Wow. So many wonderful pieces to your story here that I just want to touch on. The first that comes to my mind is her suggestion for you to get up from the bed.
Yes, very good idea.
So this is a really good point, because, I mean, in the end, what we want is the baby to descend. Yep. And when we are laying flat on our bed, sometimes it can make it harder for the baby to descend.
Yeah. So any kind of... I didn't think about this. So she said, just stand up for a second, stretch your legs. Yeah. And he just...
Yeah.
Straight down.
This upright positioning is really helpful, and movement of the hips can also be really helpful. So I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we saw the impact that that had. Like, what an impact.
Yeah.
From 5 to 10. And just also this point of this going from 5 to 10 is such a amazing part of your story, because it shows really how non-linear our bodies can be, especially in birth. Birth is not a linear act. You know, it doesn't happen in a steady way that can be predicted. It happens in really unpredictable ways. And sometimes, you know, the body opens from 5 to 10 in 5 minutes or less. So it is so nice to hear that and to just normalize that that also can happen. And, you know, if I share a little bit of my story in here, I actually, when I was giving birth to my daughter, I asked not to know the dilation.
Really?
Yes.
I'm far too curious to do that. I need to know everything all the time.
I felt like it wouldn't benefit me to know.
Well, it probably doesn't, to be honest, but it's just because I'm too nosy. I need to know exactly what's going on at all times. And I can't not know.
Yes. No, I completely understand that. Also, that's also a really good perspective. Like, just to compare here, these two needs. Like, my need was not to get distracted by the numbers.
Yeah.
And to not to have this feeling, oh, it's only 5, because I knew it wouldn't matter. And I knew that.
To be fair, that is a good point, because they told me, well, it's 5. And I was like, I thought I was quick at this. and then I was, but her telling me 5 was, did feel very discouraging.
Yeah. So, and in the end, it had no effect, because
he came out.
And what happens to us when we hear those numbers is that we start to do the calculations.
Yeah.
So, okay, it took me X amount of hours to get to 5. So that must mean it's going to be double the time to get from 5 to 10. And that often is not the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were doing. And we were doing the math of it. We had this conversation out loud with Ben. And we were saying, well, if this is how slow it's going to go, then, you know, maybe he'll just be born tomorrow and it will be the 1st of November and our dream for a Halloween baby won't happen. 5 minutes later, there he was.
yeah. Because it can happen like that it goes from 5 to 10 and so fast. I also did. I went from 4 to 10 or 5 to 10 in like half an hour.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it does happen. And it's really nice to know and to hear and to normalize that bodies do this.
Yeah.
So those are the two things I wanted to touch on what you said. And I'm also curious to ask you, like, how did you feel in the hospital? Because often women who are preparing for labor, especially if it's the first labor, and especially when we are foreigners here, it's hard to imagine, you know, what happens in the hospital. What is the atmosphere? We always want to be reassured that it's going to feel safe and good and positive. So whatever your experience was, I'm curious to hear, how did you feel in terms of safety there, your well-being, being cared for, being respected?
Well, I felt respected, and I feel respected only because I'm older now, and then obviously my first birth, but also because I'm a nurse myself working in a hospital, which they knew. And so when they would come and tell me certain things, like press the buzzer when you need us, I have been the other person of the buzzer, like on the other end of the buzzer, and it's exhausting sometimes. So I was very hesitant of ever asking for help from the people there, or from the midwives or nurses, especially because I know the situation of nurses and well, just all healthcare in general at the moment. People are rushed off their feet, they're overworked and underpaid. So I was very, very hesitant the whole time and very aware of what everyone was doing. And I think a lot of my focus when I had the balloon wasn't, I wonder if it'll come out soon. It was more so, I wonder how many people are working here today. I wonder if they have enough people for shift change. I wonder if they're all okay. I wonder if they need a minute to have a break. And so I feel respected this time round, but I also feel that I wouldn't have been as respected had I not spoken Finnish. because I do see a difference sometimes when I myself have even applied for work or been to different places, when they assume because I'm English, I don't speak Finnish. And then as soon as I open my mouth and speak Finnish and sound Finnish, then everyone sort of brightens up a lot more and they're just sort of a lot more open and social, which to me is very wrong. Very wrong. And yeah. With Ben being black also, I feel that it is a very, very strange prejudice that every single healthcare professional assumes that he does not speak Finnish.
Mm-hmm.
When he is more Finnish than I am. So to me, that's really strange. And I had to, that's one thing we had to keep telling them. And we were at one point also asked, well, he was asked, what are you? And I was asking what they meant by that. And they were like, well, what is he? And I was like, could you please ask that in a more respectful way?
He is a human.
And they were just like, well, what country? Like, where is he from? And yeah. I said, well, he was adopted from Colombia. And no, we don't need that drug you're about to offer us. So, yeah, I felt more so because we did get more respect because we both speak fluent Finnish. But I feel that there are still very, very, especially in Finland, there are very, very many maybe unconscious racist comments that they don't themselves even acknowledge at all. And lots of prejudice also, assuming every time that Ben doesn't speak Finnish when he is more Finnish than I am.
Yeah. I appreciate you bringing this topic because it is something that we see and it's a little bit hushed, yeah. But you've had that experience firsthand and it's your story. It's part of your story. So it's really important that you are speaking about it and saying how it felt for you in that setting.
Yeah. And I do feel that a lot of, you know, I it's my responsibility also to sort of stand up as myself, a healthcare professional, and tell them when they're doing wrong. And I have said that I'm every time I say I'm the English one, he is more Finnish than I am. And it sort of makes them feel very uncomfortable for a minute. And they're just sort of very apologetic. But, you know, don't assume just because he's black. He speaks very fluent Finnish, thank you. His mother tongue is Swedish. So, yeah. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done on racism. That's a whole other podcast story. But there's a lot of work in Finland, especially in healthcare as well, of how people are treated based on their culture, their religion, their race, all of these things, especially those who don't speak Finnish.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that as well. Anything else about the experience in the hospital or with the birth, or should we move on to the moments after?
Yeah, we can move on to maybe the moments after. I think that, that's all.
Yeah. Good. Said and done.
Yes.
All right. So let's picture that moment. If I can throw you back, you know, to that moment of seeing your baby for the first time and having him, you know, come out so fast.
Yep.
Were you standing at that point or were you back on the bed?
No, I was back in bed lying down.
Okay.
And one of the things I'd also asked for before he came out is as soon as he's born, lift him up so I can see him, please.
Mm-hmm.
But also, do not drop this child. I had such a horrible, intense fear that he would be so slippy that they would drop him. Mm-hmm. And I said it to her so many times. I trust you, but please don't drop him.
That is such a legitimate fear. I mean, never mind the logic that they hold so many babies in their hands every day. But
yeah, but you know, the accidents happen. And I just, I was so, it was a very big fear that they would, that he would be so slippy and then drop him, but also that I wouldn't be able to see him. straight away. I didn't want everybody else in the room to sit there and admire him while I'm still lying there waiting to see my child.
So was he then brought to your chest area?
Yeah, he was brought to my chest straight away. Everyone was crying. it was a really beautiful moment, and I was checking his fingers and his toes, checking they're all there, checking his beautiful face. It was an amazing moment. Again, it doesn't, I think that with each birth, it doesn't get any less overwhelming. It's such an overwhelming, amazing, like euphoric feeling to see a child that you've grown in your body for the first time. It's amazing. Yeah.
And then how did the placenta was born a little bit after, or?
Yeah, I think within a few minutes, it just kind of by itself, she was just like one little person. I was like, here you go. And then, well, Ben was very curious again this time round to see how it works and what it looks like, and which I'm happy about that he's interested in that kind of stuff. And we were asked if we would like to keep it. And I politely declined.
That was going to be my next question.
I don't know what I would do with that. You can have it.
Yeah. Well, there are different options. Each one has their own choice.
It was interesting. It is very interesting to see, though. This is the thing that has grown my baby inside me. So it was very interesting to see. And I think Ben was very curious. and I was just staring at the baby the whole time.
Falling in love.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And so he was on you. Did he have to be taken at all for any reason, or could he just like be with you?
No, he was left to be on us, and they told me immediately to feed him. And I asked if I need to move to a bigger bed because the bed felt a bit small and it was very high. So I was again nervous, like, what if he falls? What if he drops down? What if what if he like rolls and falls? My 2 minute old baby was not rolling anywhere. So he was just sort of lying with me for a little while, and we fell asleep, I would say, for about 10 minutes, and we were just lying there.
Precious.
Just snoozing. And then the midwife came back. She gave the baby to dad to hold. And Ben was then lying down with the baby on his chest, sort of looking at his little baby while I was getting sorted out and cleaned up and stuff.
Did you have a need for any stitching?
No, I had no tearing or anything. I felt there was a very overwhelming amount of blood, though. So that made me nervous. And I was anemic throughout the pregnancy also, despite having being given, what's it called? The iron drip. I was put on that for a couple
transfusion.
Of hours. A couple of weeks, I think 2-3 weeks before he was born. It did nothing. So they measured my hemoglobin before and my ferritins, and they were lower after. So it did nothing. So I felt very, very lightheaded and dizzy after having lost any amount of blood. I think was just, I felt very, very close to passing out. So they were carrying me to the bathroom and helping me sort myself out and shower and stuff. Cause I was seeing stars. It was very, very strange.
Yeah. Oh, that's,
yeah.
Yeah. And then, so did you do the breastfeeding? Did he latch in those first hours?
Yeah, he latched straight away. Yeah, he did. It went very well. And then they took his weight after I'd fed him.
That's wonderful.
That
they could wait with that. Good. And then you were moved to another room, I suppose, like the family room or the recovery room or whatever it's called.
Well, then we were actually asked what we want to do, if we would like to go to the hotel. Ah. What's that called in English?
I think the Nest.
Like family nesting hotel. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nest Hotel, and they said the list of requirements is quite high, but if we fit all of them, then we are more than welcome to go. So we did the checklist, and they said 6 hours after birth, you have to be at the hospital, and then we were welcome to leave to go to the Nest Hotel. So we were moved temporarily to a room. We had our own room there. We ordered some food. We were very hungry. So Ben ordered some Volt food for us.
I suppose the Nystan Clinica is one of their most common spots to drop off food.
So we had amazing Nepalese food when our son was between the hours of two hours old and six
Sounds
hours old.
Like a great choice for postpartum food.
Yeah, so they did all the checks on me and everything was good. They did all the checks on him and everything was good. And they said that we can go. I think they came three more times just to check my stomach and push it down to make sure it was sort of emptying. And then they said, we can go. And we left. We left after 6 hours to the nesting hotel, which I'd never been to before. And it was amazing.
What did you like about it?
Everything. I think it's like, because I love hotels anyway, I'm a very hotel-y kind of person. I just love, even if it was right next to my house, I love staying in a hotel. So we arrived there, they showed us around, they showed us how it worked. It was, first of all, so clean. I love how clean it was. And it was cozy. It wasn't like a hospital. It wasn't cold. It wasn't sort of without warmth. Like it was, we had everything we needed in this hotel room. And it was perfect. We had the buffet coupons to go get food every day. Ben had to get his own food, and my children were allowed to visit, which was, well, it felt amazing, the thought of it. And then in practice, it was slightly more challenging. But I was very excited for them to come and meet their new little brother. And then when they got there after about 5 minutes, I was ready for them to leave again.
Okay, that's enough now.
Okay, bye.
Yep.
No, I feel like my overwhelming amount of love for this baby made me feel an overwhelming amount of love for the whole family. And I just wanted them all close until the 1.5-year-old started squealing for his cars. And then I was like, I'll love you from a distance.
I'll love you later. Nice. And you were having a little bit of challenge. I think this is when we spoke, right? I remember talking.
Yes, we were texting.
Yeah. We were having a little bit of challenges with the jaundice.
Yes. So, well, Victoria had sent me a message on the day Rudy was born and said, do you remember that amazing thing you were talking about where you said having a postpartum doula was the best idea ever? She said, I've bought you Danielle. And I cried. I was so happy and grateful. Then she gave me your number and we were trying to talk about plans of when would be the best time. And yeah, then the jaundice thing happened. So, which I know is very common. Also, my first daughter, my only daughter, had it. But with this time round, he was put in the light for 24 hours.
Yes.
And it helped a little bit to the point we were allowed to leave after a few days. We were allowed to leave, go back home. But then it shot up again after we got back home.
And you could see that because he was turning.
He was like orange. He was really, and at first we weren't really sure because he's a mixed baby. We weren't sure if he's yellow or if he's just that color. But then it started to get so obvious. And
the eyes as well.
Especially the whites of the eyes had gone very, very dark yellow.
Yes.
So I started to get nervous and I called the hospital and I told them I'm very concerned. And they told us to wait for the Neovola, but then the Neovola were also very concerned. And I did say, I told you so.
I'm going to ask you a question because what helps jaundice often is for the baby to pee and poop. So when the baby can pee and poop, the bilirubin is extracted also in that way. And in order for the baby to pee and poop, the baby has to ingest milk. So one of the ways, in addition to the light, in helping with jaundice is to help women breastfeed.
See, they told
me. Did anyone
talk
to you about that?
They were trying to force formula on us, and I think the pressure to breastfeed is so high sometimes that I was very, very confused, actually, about why my wishes to breastfeed, which is what people usually want, are being ignored. So they were telling me, you have to give him formula. It's for his health, and
for the jaundice.
All of these things. Yes, for the jaundice. And they were saying, it's your milk that's turning him yellow. And I was saying, I think you're wrong, which is when I was asking your advice. And I said, I don't know much about breastfeeding at all. I only breastfed about five months with my son, my previous son. But I just, you know, I didn't ask questions. I just did it. And so I didn't know that much. And that's when I was asking you, I started to feel so overwhelmed and frustrated that they were not listening to what I was telling them, that I did not want to give this baby any formula. And they said they were going to take him for a little while to test him. And I said, no, you're not. And I said, that child is not leaving my sight, full stop. And I think that at that point, they started to get quite frustrated with me. At least a couple of them did. There were some very, very friendly midwives there. But yeah, I struggled with the yes. formula and breastfeed aspect of things, because I wanted it to be stress-free. I don't think anybody's life with a newborn is completely stress-free. But
and honestly, I have not met a new mother who does not struggle with breastfeeding and this kind of early jaundice signs maybe, and this pressure to need to breastfeed more. Like, this is so common, and actually it's the norm, or let's say the what usually happens. Common doesn't necessarily have to be the norm, but it's what's really common in our society to see in right now, that women are struggling with breastfeeding.
Yeah.
So you are not weird for that, and it's good that you can anticipate it also, because it means that you are aware that you will need help.
Yeah. I did need a little bit. I could have used the support, and you were the main support, because I was able to talk to you about it, and I felt very, very frustrated and alone with that before I talked to you about it. Because I was very lost. I didn't know what to do. And they were telling me it's for his own benefits, for his health. At one point, his blood sugar had dropped a tiny bit, not to dangerous levels, but it was a bit below their level. And so they said, no, we have to give him formula now. And I was just really, I was still so against it. And not that there's anything wrong with formula fed babies. I used formula completely the first time around. But this was my goal, and it was my decision anyway, and this is what I wanted to do this time around. And I felt just so, I was just getting so frustrated and overwhelmed, and I was just in tears because they weren't listening to me. I was worried for the baby, like, is it my fault? Am I doing this to him? And even as we had left the hospital, I wasn't giving him formula, and we left the hospital and we had to keep going back. So I think we went back a total of 4 times to have his blood taken, which in itself is very heartbreaking, watching a baby cry, having blood taken with all the hormones and everything. It was very difficult, and I felt... I don't even know what the right word would be. I just felt very overwhelmed with everything and a bit let down. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, we didn't have to give him formula. I stuck to my guns and just kept feeding him. And I was on a schedule, waking up every 2 to 3 hours, because he was exhausted. He wasn't waking up by himself.
And also, if I can add that also with the low blood sugar, what often happens in the first week of baby's life is that they are a little bit low on the blood sugar, and then we also see them being sleepy. So when our blood sugar levels are lower, we are more tired. And so we get into this cycle with their newborn babies that if they're not taking in the milk properly, they're not feeding well, they're more tired, so they're not feeding well because they're tired, but they need to feed in order to be more awake, in order to feed. So it's like this cycle that can be really hard to break away from. And so in the beginning, that's why you may find yourself needing to feed on a little bit more of a stricter schedule, just to get the milk into that baby. But let's say that
which I was more than happy to do. I was very, very, very adamant with these, with all of the healthcare professionals, that I'm doing this. And I'm not going to need your formula. I'm not going to go back to the hospital. His levels did get quite high. And it was just sort of on the borderline of having to be rehospitalized. And I said, like, I'm going to do this. Just give me a couple of days. I was very worried for him. Just because I know it can, if it gets over a certain level, it can cause neurological damage. And that was my main fear. But I had an alarm for every single 2 hours. I'm going to feed this baby, whether he likes it or not. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're tired, we're waking up and we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And they were telling me, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to give him formula, you need to give him a bit of sugar so he has more energy. And I was saying, no, I'm giving him my milk, because my milk won't come in unless he drinks it.
You had that education.
I'm not ready to just let it dry up because of what you think I need. And I think they were looking for a quick fix, to just so it was sort of dealt with, out the door, next person. Which again, if they're understaffed and stuff, I can sort of feel for them. Like I understand they want to sort of get things done quickly, but this is my life, you know, this is my little new baby. Kept telling them, I know what I'm doing. I'm figuring this out. I'm gonna do it. I'm waking up every 2 hours, every single day, every night, 2 hours, I'm waking up and I'm feeding him. And then slowly but surely, after a few days, I would say like a total of 2 weeks, he started to get much better and much better and much better. And then the yellow was going away. And I think it probably took about a month and a half for him to look not like a Simpson. So he had a bit more energy then. I mean, he is quite a tired baby, to be honest. He sleeps very, very well, but his weight has gone up exactly as it should. And he's developing exactly as he should. He's very strong. As a lot of people saw yesterday, he has a really cool party trick because he's such a strong boy. And we've gone solely on breast milk so far. And we haven't needed any extras. I'm very proud of that. And I would very, very much encourage all new mums to, you know best, if you feel like you have the energy to do it every 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever your baby needs, then 100% do it, because otherwise the milk very much can dry up. And it will be a lot more challenging.
And you had that awareness of how breast milk production works, so that you knew that it was about supply and demand. First comes the demand, actually, and then comes the supply.
Yeah, and so, I know that even when nothing is necessarily coming out, he needs to be trying to get it out for it to produce more. And it can be quite frustrating those times. And I think a lot of people, myself included, with the last baby, then gives up because they're like, oh, he's hungry, he's not getting enough, I need to give him formula. But I promise you that even if the baby is getting frustrated, just keep trying, because even if nothing is coming out right away, any sort of stimulation will work. It will. You'll get there in the end. And
the small babies don't often need as much as we actually give them in the bottles.
No, they need a tiny little
They only
amount.
Have a very small amount, like a stomach. That's why colostrum is so dense, but low quantity.
Yeah.
Because they actually can't handle that much. So it's interesting. Breastfeeding is a whole other topic, and we have a few episodes on breastfeeding on the podcast. So definitely go and have a listen. But I think we'll start to wrap up this episode. Is there anything else that comes to your mind to share about giving birth in Finland with our listeners?
If you're a foreigner, then 100% stick up for yourself. If you feel like you're being mistreated, especially, stick up for yourself and put the person in a bit of an awkward, uncomfortable situation, because there's no other way that it's going to change. And after living here for 14 years myself, I'm considered an expat here because I'm English. I'm not from a developing country, and I'm white, so I'm more accepted by Finns. But as the mother of mixed race children now, my partner is adopted from Colombia. I feel it's very much also not just for them, but I think for everyone. Like, it's all of our duty to make it right. And I do feel like Finland is still relatively new to multiculturalism, I would say. And I think that a lot of them are very patriotic, but that doesn't mean you get to be consciously or unconsciously prejudiced or racist to, to other cultures or races or religions. So stand up for yourself. And with that, but with also breastfeeding, if you want to breastfeed, then breastfeed. You know your baby best. Obviously, there is lots of helpful advice you can ask from healthcare professionals. But being in the system myself, I can also say, unfortunately, there are many, many healthcare professionals who don't know what they're doing. They have very outdated information, or they have very the wrong information. Something that works for somebody else won't necessarily work for you. And you know your body and you know your baby. And if you need some advice or support with a postpartum or breastfeeding, then the people are here, especially mm-hmm. people who operate in English language. Daniela is one of them. So get a postpartum doula, because it is 100% worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be my advice.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience and what you enjoyed, what you didn't enjoy so much as well. All are so important and very, very relevant and valid for our for our episode. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this has been a pleasure.
Do you have the feeling that you need more support as you enter a time of transition in your life? Are you perhaps facing a rite of passage, such as the birth of your baby? I'm inviting you to join me and my colleague Tori on a webinar all about rites of passage and times of transition. This one is for you if you want to learn more on the importance of respecting rites of passage, learn how to connect with the cyclical nature of our body and use its power to guide you. You will learn how to trust the cycles to guide you through the dark times of transition, learning and knowing, trusting that there is also a rebirth. We will also guide you to see rites of passage and times of transition as an opportunity for growth and expansion. This webinar is for anybody who is facing a rite of passage or transition, has just experienced one, is supporting someone through transition, or has had challenging transitions in the past and would love to change that pattern going forward. If this speaks to you, I invite you to join me on March the 30th at 7 p.m. local Finnish time. You can save your seat right now with the link in the show notes of this episode.
Thank you for tuning in to the Birthing in Finland podcast. To get the show notes for this episode, go to doulacollective.fi/birthing in Finland. If you enjoyed the episode, go ahead and share this with someone who you think needs to hear it. A friend, a colleague, a neighbor. Help us get the word out so that more families can start enjoying these conversations. See you next time when I introduce you to another amazing person supporting families just like yours.